to repeat, Rabbi Yochanan says that what do we say? This is the language of a Talmud Chacham. It says, blessed be he from whose bounty, Mishalo, right, Shachanu, we have eaten. We've eaten from his bounty. But what if he says, Al Hamazon, Shachanu, we thank God for the food which we have eaten, Harezebur. He's in again, this is a sign of ignorance. Why? Because instead of thanking God for the bounty that we have enjoyed and whose bounty we have eaten from, he's simply saying, you know, well, we're glad that we had food to eat. He puts the stress upon the food and not upon God's goodness, you see. Omer Rav Huna Boredo Rav Yeshua Lo Amoran El Begimel Veleke Shem Shemayim. So he had a little proviso. He says, well, this argument that you can give, you know, this is only if you only have three people over there. In other words, you know, less than a minion, right? Why? The Lech Hashem Shemayim, because in that case, in the introduction to the Birkas HaMazon, we don't use God's name. We simply say, you know, the word of Sheikh Al-Mishon, right? Mm-hmm. But Avol Basora, what if you have a minion present, the Iko Shem Shemayim? Then in that particular case, you know, God's name is specifically mentioned. Then Luchachom Ilson, right? Then the thing is proved already that who are we saying, you know, if he would say Al Hamoza, but he included God's name over there, right? Nevarech Elokeinu, let's say Al Hamoza, let's give thanks to God for the food, then in that case we are mentioning God's name and therefore we're conscious even if we didn't say Uptuvochayin. You understand? This is what he's arguing. Okay? Kidit Nan, as we have learned, Ki Inyan Shahum Bore Kano Vakron. After all, we learned that the way he says the bracha, this is how people reply to it, right? Baruch Hashem, Elokei Yisrael, Elokei Hatzvos, Yisheh Kvim, right? Al Hamoza, Yisheh Vachalim. In other words, he could say the whole, you know, deal over there, the whole spiel, if we had, how many? 10,000 people over there, right? So you could say, in that particular case, we give thanks to God, right? The God of Israel, the God of hosts, he who dwells among the cherubim, for the food which we have eaten. And it says over there, Al-Hamazon, Sheikh Al-Nan doesn't say, you know, and he did not include, he didn't include. Of course, what we do, we say to the Chayyim. Of course, as we already learned, as Rabbi Akiva said, it's best, you know, to have one nusa for everybody. All right, so granted, the introduction differs between if you only have less than a mezumin and if you have, you have less than a minion as compared to if you have a minion or more, but you don't have to go into all the fine gradations that we learned in this particular mission.
Simplified it.
Right. Alright, so now they go back again to the analysis of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says, Echad Asorot makes no difference whether you have 10, the Echad Asoraribo, it makes no difference if you have 10 thousands, okay? So they say, oh, good for Kasha, but isn't this itself a difficulty? Amrit, you say, Echad Asorot, the Echad Asoraribo, right? You say it makes no difference whether it's 10 or whether it's 10 thousands. Alma, so we see ki hadod in indhu, right? And we see that it makes a difference because they're alike. Vahodor katoni, and then afterwards the Mishnah continues. You know, the first language was also in the Mishnah. So the question is, what is that language doing there? That's why I had to give a different twist to it when I first had it, to try to interpret it in its context. In its context, it would seem to mean that it would make no difference whether it's 10 or 10,000, in the sense that if the guy says, if there's one more than the exact number, then you would say Baruch Hu, right? But as we all recognize, it's kind of a strained interpretation. So that therefore, they're trying now to straighten out what is the meaning of this little phrase which occurs right in the middle of the Mishnah, which implies that there shouldn't be any differentiation. And then, why then does the Mishnah continue right after that and say, and if you have 100, and if you have 101, if you have 1,000, 1,001, etc., etc. So, therefore, they're saying But a katonim b'meya omer, right? Elef omer, if you have 100, you say this. If you have 1,000, if you have 10,000, you say this. Some are Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says, like Kasha, no, it's not a difficulty. Says, ho, Rabbi Yosef, we have to say that in the Mishnah you have two different opinions. One is that of Yossi HaGlili, who says that according to the number you vary the phrase, and ho, Rabbi Akiva. And the other opinion, in other words, this little statement in the Mishnah makes no difference whether it's, 10 or 100,000, doesn't make any difference. This is Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Yosef Glil Omer Fi Rov HaKohol Hemevorchim Shenemar, right? Because we learned in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yosef Glil says that according to the multitude of the congregation, this is how they praise the bracha, as it is said, the Markelo is Boku Elikim, that in assemblies praise ye God. So then the Mishnah continued, and it said, Omer Rabbi Akiva, Mamatsinim Beis HaKnesses, right, this is the discussion. Rabbi Akiva says, in the Mishnah, it says, look, why should you make any differentiation? You go to a shul, and no matter how many there are in the shul, the chazan says, Boku Es HaRashem, to which we add Ham Farah, right? But the point is that it doesn't vary no matter how many people are in the shul. Okay? So, Rabbi Akiva says, Hi, Kroda Rabbi Yosef, Glil my Ovid leg. So now they say, why is it? Says, tell me, so what is Rabbi Akiva? How is he going to interpret the pasuk that Rabbi Yosef Glili cited? Rabbi Yosef Glili said, the Markelo spoke of the Kimim Kor Yisrael. This means, therefore, that according to the multitudes, this is how you praise the benching, this is how you praise God, right? Rabbi Akiva says, no, one straight formula for praising God, and that's it. So, what does he do with this pasuk? So, he gives a different interpretation. Miboile says, he needs it, look at Tanya. As we have learned, where it says, Rahoya Rabbi Meir Omer, the Rabbi Meir said that Minayim Shafilu Borish Abay Imon Omru Shiral Hayom. How do we know that even the fetuses, the unborn children who were still in their mother's wombs, said Omein, said that they sang, Oz Yosher at the Red Sea, when the Red Sea was split, the Svend Oz Yosher Meshav, the Yisrael Sashar Azos Hashem. So there's a tradition that says even the unborn joined in the singing, right? Praise to God. Shenemar, it says the Pasuk that shows this is for Markelos, Baruch Hu Elokim, Ad Hashem, and Mekor Yisrael, right? In groups, in congregations, praising God, or the Lord, Mimakor Yisrael, from the fountain of Israel. Now, Makor in Hebrew means source, fountain, okay? But Makor could also mean like, the fountain. For example, we speak about, in the case of menstruation, okay? Oh. A woman becomes a nida when she has her period and so on. So, what is the phrase that the Talmud uses in that connection? Talmud uses the phrase "dam mimokor." In other words, this is blood which issues forth from the mokor. Mokor, in this case, meaning like, let's say, the ovaries. In other words, the source of the blood inside the woman's body, which creates, which enables her subsequently, to conceive and to have children. Okay, so that therefore, we have to assume then that this is what he's trying to say, okay? That Mimakor Yisrael means even from the wombs of the pregnant women in Israel at the time of when they crossed the Red Sea, that even their unborn children were singing praises unto God at that moment. The Edoch. And how about Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, who used it in order to show, Baruch Hu Elokim Ad Hashem, right? The Markelos Baruch Hu Elokim. So he says, all right, that part of the pasuk he used for the benching, that you should have different formulations. But the rest of the pasuk from Kor Yisrael, so he says from this part of the pasuk, the Yidach b'Mekor Nafka, he derives the same idea, you know, that the unborn also sang praises unto God. Omar Rava. Rava says, Aloka k'Rabbi Akiva. Aloka follows Rabbi Akiva. Rabino of Rav Choma Bar Buzi. Now we learn that Rabino and Rav Choma Bar Buzi, Iklu v'Reish Golusa, they happened to be invited to a dinner at the house of the Reish Golusa. Remember we said that he was the person who headed the Babylonian Jewish community. He was the prince of the Jewish community over there, or the exilarch, to use the fancy title that they gave him. Okay? Come Rav Choma. So Rav Choma arose, the Koma Hader Abbe Meir, and he started in to look to see if he could gather together 100 people over there for the benching. Now obviously, why was he looking for 100? Because he followed Rabbi Yossi Aglili. You understand? In that, he felt, you know, if he could get 100, he could already add, you know, a higher Montevega, you know, of a praise to God. So he started looking for that. Similarly, Rabino said to him, Lord Smithish, you don't need. Lord Smithish, you don't need. Well, look, obviously, you're right. I'm sure that at the exilarch's house, they invited the group. You know, he can have a banquet over there. So, presumably, this is what the situation was. So, Rabino said to Lord Smithish, you don't need it. Don't have to go looking for it. Okay, I'm a robot. After all, Rabbi said, Halokim Rabbi Akiva. And we don't. According to Rabbi Akiva, whether you have 10 or 10,000, right, makes no difference. So, all right. Omar Rabba. Now Rabba also tells his story. He says, you know, when we used to eat bread, literally, Rifta, at the home of the exilarch, Mivarchin and Gimel Gimel. So we would, you know, make our own little mezumins. Of course, the question is, why did they make their own little mezumins? The answer is that actually they give two answers. Answer number one is that they were pressed for time, perhaps. They couldn't wait until the Reish Galusa finally finished his meal, right? And so they decided to make a mezumin beforehand. That also by making a small group, if they made their own still a hate mezumin, you know, without shouting out loud, right? So the Reish Galusa wouldn't hear it, and they wouldn't be angry with them, you know, that they want to leave the meal earlier than before he had actually finished, because of question of etiquette. You understand? They felt that the Reish Galusa would be aware of the fact, you know, that he hears them saying, let's say, benching out loud, then he would be good and angry with them that they're doing so. So anyway, the question that they asked upon Rava's statement is, hey, Budivorku Yud Yud, look, why do you break into small groups of three? Why not break into smaller into bigger groups of, you know, 10 and 10? So he answers, Shavu Reish Galusa V'yikpet. That's what I said a moment ago, that the Reish Galusa will hear and will get angry. In other words, if you have 10 benching, it certainly makes more noise than when 3 bench. Okay? So it'll become angry. So then they say, the Nivka b'Birchos of the Reish Galusa. So why don't we, the Yoyt say then with the Brocha that the Reish Galusa will give, you know, when he benches afterwards? Why don't we wait and the Yoyt say with his Brocha? So he says, I did the Afshe, Yikuli Yalmei Lo Shavim. He says, inasmuch as there'll be, you know, a big crowd, so then it wouldn't be so noticeable, you know, if we break off beforehand. Omar Rabba Tosfos, Rabba Tosfos said, Hane Yinim, the Karche Rifthim Hadei Adode. He says, now what if you have 3 people who are eating? You know, they eat together the same meal. The Kodim Chad Binayhu, Uvorech Lidate. So, and he, one of them, said, you know, hey, let's bench. And he said, you know, Rabbi Simon Baron bench, and so on and so forth. So, in the Nafkim is even the day. So, they are Yotze with his, you know, invitation. Ihu loy nofik bezimin di dehu. But he is not Yotze with theirs, the fisha'in zimun mafir, because it isn't retroactive. All right, let's see what the situation is over here. Because we had a somewhat similar situation. We learned previously the question about the etiquette, if you remember. Is it right for one person to say to the two other people with whom he's eating, look, I have to run right now,
so
let's bench, right? We learned it's not right. Two can say to a third one who's still eating, they can say to him, look, let's make a mitzvah right now. And then we learned that what does the third person do? The third person waits until they've said, you know, Ruach Ato Shem HaSod is HaKoyel. That's where he answers the Zimun, right? And then after they reach Hazon and Sakol, you know, they've finished the first problem,
then he can go back
and finish eating and finish the benching for himself. Okay.
But where does he start from when he goes back to finish?
Oh, well, that was a difference of opinion, too. But we paskin that he goes right back to the beginning of the benching.
Yeah, right.
Because there was one opinion that said that he starts from Neidel Lechor.
Right.
He would be Yotze, in other words, Hazon and Sakol, by hearing it from them, then he would simply say to Neidel Lechor. But we don't paskin that way.
He goes back to the beginning.
Right. But of course, he doesn't have to say Rabbi Simon Boris.
No, obviously.
To himself.
Because he doesn't have a mezuzah anymore.
All right. So, what they're saying is over here, however, what if the one person didn't follow the etiquette?
Oh.
Okay?
Same.
And he said, you know, Rabbi Simon Boris, okay? So, if they answer, they are Yaitse with this Zimun, right? You understand? But what if a guy went away and then he comes back and he finds that his companions have already said, you know, the grace after meals? Then in that case, he is not yet. Why? Because as they say over here, ein zimun mafreya. You don't make zimun retroactive.
In other words, he went out
once
to wash his hands.
They snuck and benched
in the meantime.
Right. So in that case, he can't be Yotze with the fact that they have already had. Maybe they found, either they did it for themselves instead of waiting for him, which was, it would have been better if they would wait for him, but you know, why did he go out? We don't know.
Or they got another third party.
Right, or they got a third party, exactly. It's also possible, yeah. Rabbi Yishmael Omer, Rabbi Yishmael, if you remember, says that you should say Baruch Hashem HaBoruch. Okay. Raphram Bar Papa. Raphim Bar Papa is another Atamal Chochem. So Ikla Levei Knishta Abai Giver. He said he came to the shul in Avi Giver. Kom, so he arose, Kro the Sifra, and he read the Torah. Right, the Omar and the bracha that he started with is Baruch Hu Esad Hashem. Right, the Ishtik, and that's it. He didn't say anything more. Velo Omar Hamavorach.
Didn't say Hamavorach.
Yeah, he didn't say Hamavorach. So Avshin Kuli Yalmo, Baruch Hashem Hamavorach. So they all shouted out to him, hey, you have to say Baruch Hashem Hamavorach.
Don't fall asleep on it.
Yeah. So Omar Rabba.
But they weren't considered Niktanim, huh?
Right, Naktanim, right. Because they ever knew what's.
What?
Okay.
Knocked on him, the phrase that we had before over there.
Oh.
You know, people who are very punctilious.
Oh, punctilious, okay.
That is important.
So Omar Rava, so Rava said to him, hey, Pasi Uchmoy says, hey, black pot. according to one opinion, that maybe he was kind of black, you know, had a black, dark complexion or something like that. So
Schwarz.
Yeah, Schwarz. Okay, he said Schwarz. Mr. Schwarz.
Mr. Schwarz.
Bahari plukte lamelachol. Yeah. First of all, why do you have to get yourself involved in the difference of opinion? You need it.
In other words, why are you mixing
right.
in?
Exactly. What are you mixing in? You have to show that there is a machlekes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, and you side with Rabbi Akiva. Who cares, he says. Don't have to get involved, first of all, in the argument. The Yod, he says, and furthermore, he says, the whole world already now follows Rabbi Yishmael in this particular case. And everybody says, so you should do exactly the same. Okay. Well, do a little bit more Mishnah. I'd like to get at least to the bottom of the page tonight. Okay. All right. So the Mishnah now says, If three eat together, right, then einam rishayim lechalek, then they are not permitted to break up. In other words, they have to stay as a group. V'chein dalet, v'chein chamisha, right? And likewise four, and likewise five. In other words, if you have three, four, or five, the obligation for zimun now exists, right? And therefore, you cannot break away from it. You have to wait until, you know, the
until
you're ready to do it.
Yeah.
You know, we have this problem with our morning breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, that some people break away,
morning.
Right? Yeah.
You wind up
strictly
with
speaking, they shouldn't be doing it. It would have been better if perhaps what they did, you know, is simply to, let's say, get a small group of three who are in a rush, let them, and then the rest of us, you know, would stay and we'd make our own. But of course, talking about where it's less than ten. Because with ten, since we have to add already something else, right?
Huh?
So this is what he says. Bob, Nechlok and Arasor, as we said, right? Six can form groups up to ten, as I said, but not including ten. Vasora, but ten cannot be a Nechlok, right? They cannot be divided ad kaf, unless, you know, you go beyond 20. If you have 20 who are sitting, then of course you can have two minyanim, you know, each one. This is possible, okay? Now, shtei chaburos, if you have two chaburos, incidentally, notice the word chabura that's become so popular today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but here's, you know, the word being used. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have two groups, shehoyu ochos v'vayisachot, they were eating in one house. But not necessarily in the same room. I mean, if they were in the same room, there's no question that, you know,
they have to.
Right. But let's say they're in this room and somewhere out there in the hall or something like that eating. So, in this case, he says what? Bisman shemiksosin roen elu v'selo. As long as some in one group can see some in the other, right? In other words, there is like a mutual, you know, you have the feeling that those people who are in the other part, you can still see some of them, so that it's one big group, then harei elim is far from the zimun. Then in that particular case, they could be el added to the zimun. So let's say if you had five over here and five out over there, so in that particular case, as long as I could see them out there and they could see us, then in that particular case, we could make one minyan out of the two of us, okay? V'yim lav, but if not, then elim izamun liyatzko, elim izamun. But if not, if you can't see each other, in that case, you simply form your own separate groups, and you bench that way. Ein mivorchen el ayayin, and then the Mishnah concludes and says, you do not make the bracha for wine, in other words, bori priyagofen, ad sheyitein esefim ayin, until you put water into it. Rabbi Eliezer, this is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. But the Chacham say you can't make the bracha. Now, why watering the wine? So you have to understand, in those days, the wine was extremely strong. And therefore, they felt it was so strong that it would knock you out, and, you know, it was like, it was
proof,
powerful, right? So in order to make it into wine that would be potable, you know, people could drink and have hador from it. So therefore, they would add water. This is the reason why the Mishnah always uses the term mosgin esakos. Literally, they mix the cup of wine. Doesn't mean that they simply stir it. What it means is that they add water to it. So that, for example, for the Pesach Seder, in those days, they used to have to do it.
Mm.
You know, if you take a look at the Mishnah Masechet, for example, where they describe, the last chapter deals with the description of the Seder night, the one is the order that you follow, what are the special places. I mean, to this day, a good deal of the Haggadah that we recite is based upon that. So the Mishnah over there says, what's the case, right? They mix the cup, they recite Kiddush, they mix the cup, the Kana Benchel, and at this point, you know, the child has punished on Alaylaze, etc., etc. So, this was wine that they could drink, and once it's wine that you could drink, then you have to make a brother work for your brother. So, this is the point of Rabbi Eliezer, and many were inclined to agree with him. But the Chachamim say, even the wine which is unmixed you can still say the bracha Moreh Pri Hagafen. Okay? Michael Mashmonon. Now they go back again to the Mishnah. They want to know, what are we learning over here? Tanino Chadazinu, we already learned before. Shloshe Sheochu Ki Achas HaNizamek, right? This we learned in the previous Mishnah, that if three people eat together, then they have the obligation to bench with the Mezumen. So why is it added again over here? This is the question. Why does the Mishnah again have to repeat it over here? So, Hokamashvalon, Kihodam and Rabbi Abba Omar Shmuel. So the answer is to teach us what Rabbi Abba said in the name of Shmuel, that Shlosha Sheyoshu Lechol Ki Achas, that if three have sat down to eat as one, Ba'adayin Lo Ochlu, even though they have not yet begun eating, Einon Rashayin Lechalik. And from this point on, they are no longer permitted to split into groups. Okay? I mean, once you sit down as a group with the intention of eating as a group, if a person sits down to eat and he has no intention of being a part of the group, that's a different story. But if he wants to sit down at the table for the purpose of eating together with the group, he wants to be part of the group, but in that case, the minute he does so, then the obligation to Zimun, you know, is there. He has to be, okay, so he should not separate himself. Lishlach Mino, another version of this is Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Shmuel, Ochi Ketoni, this is what we learn. Gimel Sheyoshu Lechol Ki Achatz, right? If three people sit down in order to eat as one, Afal Pi Shekol Echad Yechad Ochel Mekikoro, even if each one eats of his own little separate piece of bread, in contrast to the fact that very often they used to have one loaf of bread which they would then divide it around everybody. So even if everybody has his own little piece of bread instead, right? Einon Rashayin Lecholek, they're still not permitted to split, because once they sit down to eat, then they should, you know, then eventually they're going to have the obligation that they should bench together. All right? Inami, or likewise, Kihoda Rabhuno, Doma Rabhuno. Perhaps it may be in order to bring out the opinion of Rav Huna, who said, Shlosha Shebo Megimul Chaburas, if three people came from three different Chaburas, Eino Rashayin Lecholek, they are not permitted to split. Well, this is going to require a little bit more explanation. I think we'll call a halt over here at this point and continue then next week. So now, I just want to remind you about next week. Rabbi Maurice Lamb is going to be the speaker there next week. I'd like to learn. So can we come at 7:15 and we'll learn until 8 o'clock? Okay.
When is the Brotherhood dinner?
Brotherhood dinner is Tuesday night.
Tuesday night. Oh.
Right, right. Good meal is going to be provided by Joe Luz.
Okay, so
next Wednesday night, Mr. Shim will meet at 7:15, and then we'll learn, and then we'll go in to hear the lecture of Rabbi Lash.
Okay.
We're at the bottom of Nun. Right.
And we're at the last line.
Right, the last two lines.
Last two lines.
Yeah, right.
Okay, it is now November 4th.
Right.
Continue.
Yeah, all right. So at the bottom over there, the question is, as I indicated last week, this is already a little bit complicated. The statement of Rav Huna. Rav Huna said that Gimel Shebo Mi Gimel Chavurus, right, if three came from three different groups, then Einan Roshan Lechay, they are not permitted to separate. So the question is, what are we talking about? So Rashi has his theory. Rashi says, let's take a look at it. He says, Gimel Shebo Mi Shalosh Chavurus, you know where it says Gemara down the bottom, the last couple of lines, okay? Says,
oh, yeah,
Rav Chista, right, Shebo Mi Gimel Chavurus, Shal Gimel B'nei Yodam, Bechol Chavurah. So, according to Rashi, the situation is as follows. There are three different groups, all right? In other words, nine guys around, okay? So, each group, of course, consists of three people, right? All right. Now, what happened? Obviously, because they are eating as a group of three, so each one has now the obligation
to bench
per mezumah, right? That's what he's saying over here. So, this chayvu ele b'zimun, right? That these people are obligated now, you know, to bench with the mezumah.
Right.
Now he says, "V'yomar echad mekol chaburo," and then one out of each guy, out of each group, got up. V'nitztorfu shloshel chaburo achas, and
one out of each three, they made a separate chabura now. They're all joined together to one chabura. So he says, Chayovin and Zamein, they are obligated to bench for the mezuman, the yenu rashan lecholek, and they are not permitted to split. Shekbo hukbu, because they were already settled in as a group. Va'apilo loy ochlu ela hashlosha, and even if these three had not yet eaten, mishanitztorfu yachad, right, once they were joined together, shekbo gomru sudosan imorishonim, that they've already finished their meal together with the first, so in other words, they have an obligation to bench. Now, I don't have to tell you, it presents a difficulty.
Well, if there are three groups of three,
right,
and then, as I understand the explanation, one of each of the three groups got up and formed their own group.
Correct.
That leaves the other
that
three groups,
the other two.
Two with only two in each group.
Right, right.
Therefore, they don't have a mezuman.
Absolutely right.
So that, so
and these guys still have the obligation to bench with the mezuman, right? Because they should. And the other guys, we have to assume, they also did not yet begin benching.
Right.
In other words, they hadn't finished eating.
Yeah.
Oh, so these three guys got up and benched, formed a group.
Right.
So that maybe they want to leave earlier or something
Right. Okay. This is what it seems to be. But, I mean, the difficulty is exactly what you pointed out.
Yeah.
I mean, if one leaves a group of three, then in that case, they're only left with two. Now, what has happened? Is he waited for them to say, Rabbi Yisrael Nevore? Then in that particular case, he should answer with them, right?
Right.
And what happens if he answers with them? Does he still have an obligation for a zimun?
No.
Not
anymore.
Exactly what the Gemara is going to bring out. And that's why it's difficult to understand what Rashi is saying over here. Just as the text itself is, okay?
So how do you solve the problem?
No, so therefore we have to have a different solution. So Omar Rabba, so Rabba gives a different explanation, okay? He says, below Amoron Ela Delo Igdimu Hanech Ve'izmin Alayhu, says, we're only talking about a place, only about a setup, you know, where the others did not already begin benching with a mezuman beduktayu in their own place, right? Avol izmun alayhu beduktayu, but once they have already begun with a mezuman, you know, in their original group, then in that particular case, he says porach zibum minayin. Then they have literally the obligation, you know, to bench with mezuman is not flown away from them. In other words, once they've already answered in a mezuman, then they no longer have the obligation, you know, to form a mezuman and answer with another mezuman, you see. So again, let's take a look at the Rashi.
What if they did already?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't answer to the benching, okay?
If they didn't answer at all?
No.
That is the only other alternative that they could think of, you know, if you accept Rav Huna's opinion. In other words, that the, you know, they had an obligation. The other two had already started, but, you know, this guy didn't stay around, you know, in order to answer. So
the other three groups.
So theoretically,
had
a funny Gemara several weeks ago, which says if you had, you know, a guy was there, he ate the meal with them, and then all of a sudden he left. And in the meantime, they started benching. So the assumption is that the guy who is just outside the door,
he can answer.
He can, yeah.
And it would be like
right.
A
it would be as if it were a mezuman or something like that. So perhaps this is a situation that they have in mind over here. Perhaps, but obviously it's difficult. I mean, to you know, to really follow this particular business.
Mm.
Okay. So therefore, Rashi now comes up with a different explanation. Let's take a look what he does say now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Lo Amoron, he says, you know, this is what Rabbi says. Says that what we're saying applies only the Lo Igdimu Hanuch the Izbin Alayhu B'Chayim. That you know, the other guys who were there in the group didn't already begin benching in their own place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he says Chaburo Sheparshu Eil Mehen, right? That these groups from which they separated, the Izbin Alayhu. And you know that they made a mezuman. So now he says It's as if, where can we have an example? He says, if there were four in each one, now it begins to make sense, okay?
Yeah.
If there were four, then in that particular case, under normal circumstances, if there are four, if there are five even, can they break up? The answer is no, they cannot break up, okay? But what if you had three different groups, a group over here, a group over there, and a group over there?
Three different tables, right.
Yeah, okay? And each one had four, then it's possible that, you know, one from each group could get together and they form their own separate group. They'll have the obligation to bench with the mezuzah, and at the same time, it doesn't destroy the mezuzah that you had in their original groups, because there are still three left in each group. So that this is the solution.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
If a man benches with a group, okay, he benches. And he sits down, there are two people benching, they're looking for another mezuzah. He cannot join them at that point.
Unless
he washes and makes a mitzvah.
Either that or the other. He could also, eat something. He could eat, let's say, a piece of cake, have a cup of coffee with something or other, a piece of fruit or something, so that in that particular case, it's as though he now, has a new obligation.
Group.
Right, right. So under those circumstances, yes. Yeah. But if he has already answered to a mezuzah, then in that particular case, he cannot answer to a second mezuzah without first eating something.
Either.
So that he can count it to a mezuzah. It's exactly what the idea is over here.
Right.
Omar Rava, so Rava says, he says, what do I base my opinion on? He says, Ditnan. It's based upon a Mishnah. And this is a funny Mishnah. When I say funny, it's because it has to deal with Tara and Tumah. Okay? We're so far removed from most of the ideas of Tara and Tumah that it always requires an explanation. Now, Tumor can be transferred to human beings, can be transferred to foods, okay, whether it's solid food or liquid food and so on. Tumor can also be transferred to kelim. Any kelim, in other words, an implement, whatever it may be, can be mekabel tumor, as we would say. There are exceptions. One exception, for example, would be what they call shutei kliyos. An ordinary stick, for example, this will not be mekabel tumah because it's only a stick, okay? But if you make it into something, then in that particular case, it's susceptible to tumah, okay?
There must be various ways of transferring tumah, though.
Right, absolutely right. There are different ways to transfer tumah, okay? The most obvious way to transfer tumor is by virtue of the fact that, say, it's in the presence, of a person who has died.
Touch a dead body.
Right.
And you touch the calendar before
correct,
you...
Correct,
you,
correct. Person, right, has come in contact with the dead person, and this, as we say, but ohel. In other words, it's in a covered room, a closed room, right? And in that particular case, the tumor of the mess automatically transfers to the person who's there.
Is that tumor even if you don't touch the body, or just
even
the,
if you don't touch the body,
even just the
if
presence,
you're just in the same room, right, with the mess, right?
I see.
Or under the same roof.
Under
this
same
is
roof.
Why, for example, Cohen should not go into a funeral chapel, okay? Because once he's under the roof where the mess is, then
he's tumor.
Then he's right. And Cohen is not supposed to be metame himself, even though every Kohen today, just as everybody, is in a state of tumor, because we don't have the mechatos, the water that was formed by adding the ashes of the Pora Dumo, to Mayim Chayim, the pure water, and so on. We don't have it. So therefore, all of us are in the state of tumor.
So you cannot get rid of tumor that way by just going to mikveh? No.
Not that type of tumor. Right. Mikvahs for different purposes. Spiritual cleansing, okay? Or for a specific purpose, as for example, a ger. person becomes a convert to Yiddishkeit, he has to be tovel in the mikvah. A woman has, of course, two brahmim. I mean, if she is a gioris, she's a female convert, so she has to do it for the sake of gioris, okay? And then, of course, any married woman, you know, has to do it as
Anita,
part of her menstrual, right? She's a nida. So those are reasons, you know, for it. The fact that, for example, we go to the mikveh. Chassidim have the custom of going every week, okay? And we have the custom that at least for Yom Kippur and maybe also for Rosh Hashanah we go to the mikveh. But it's primarily for a spiritual cleansing from whatever, you know, sources of tumor we've come in contact with, meaning bad thoughts, emissions that, you know, nocturnal emissions, or whatever it may be, you know, things that happen to us in the course of our life. So we go to order, to cleanse ourselves spiritually, we go in.
So in essence, you know, in essence, even a kohen can never get rid of tumah if she...
That is correct, but by the same token, doesn't mean that therefore a kohen has to go and encourage becoming tummy.
Obviously.
More. See, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's why they do not go to attend a funeral, okay? All right. So, that's one way, contact with a mess. But the Torah also indicates other ways. Example. If you come in contact with a sheretz, sheretz is a creeping thing on the ground, okay? A snake, a lizard, whatever it may be, it's a sheretz, right? Or, you know, a dead body of a sheretz or something like that. And you go and you hold it. In that case, then automatically tumah comes to you too, okay? Then, as I mentioned before, tumah can be transferred to foods and drinks under certain circumstances, okay? So obviously, if a person, you know, let's say, ate food which was tumah, then he himself becomes tumah as a result of that, okay? Of course, there are different degrees in tumah. I'm not going into, you know, the most severe degree, and then after that, you know, the next one, and then you have what we call Rishain and Shani, Shlishi, and so on. This is all very, very technical material, okay? But one of the rules concerning the tumah that a keli, by the way, there's another common way, if a woman who is menstruous, okay, sits on a chair and you share the chair with her, or a bench and you share the, or you share the bed with a woman who has, you know, she has her period, right, okay? And in that case, this is also another way, you see, of contracting tumor.
In other words, you're not supposed to sleep with your wife when she's menstruating.
That is correct. And that's the reason why people who are upgehitten, as I would say, you know,
have twin beds.
They have twin beds, exactly. So that she could be in her bed, he could be in his bed. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be in a different room, but the same
bed.
No.
In the same room, you can put the two beds side by side if you want, or you make a separation between them. It all depends, yeah. But technically, you don't sleep in the same bed, as long as she still has her periods, okay? So these are all different ways. All right, so now let's get back to the business that they have over here. Here we're talking about a bed. All right, what about this bed?
Mita.
Okay, Mita. Mishnah says that a bed, shenignavo chetzio. Let's say half of the bed was stolen. Don't ask me why anybody would want to steal half a bed, but...
Stolen.
Okay. Oh, she'ovdo chetzio. Or... half of it got lost someplace. O shechalukuha achin, o shutvin, or brothers decided to divide this bed into two. Okay, I'll take the left side, you take the right side, or something. Or partners decided to go partners in the bed, and each one wanted half of the bed, or something like that. You have to remember that the beds were not necessarily the kind of nice finished furniture that we have today. Oh. It could simply be, you know, several planks put together on which you can put a mattress, and you know, that was it, you know, right, exactly, okay? So it was possible, you know, to divide these things, okay? So, in any case, if you have only half a bed, this is the point, if you have only half a bed, but not a whole bed, then in that case, it's tahora. The bed is clean, it does not contract tumor, okay? Echezi ruho, but what happens if they restore it, in other words, in the sense
again.
That the other, right, you put it together again with the missing half, then in that case, mikabel is tumah. Now it is a complete bed, it's a complete keli, as I said, then in that particular case, it now, you know, it can now contract tumor, which is a better translation of Mekabelis over here, rather than receive. It contracts tumor, and Mekan Ulahaba, right? And from this point on, and for the future, it is now susceptible to contracting tumor.
Where does the tumor come from, though?
The tumor comes from, by virtue of the fact, as I said, maybe somebody who was tummy.
For example, a woman who had a period. They don't say.
There are other ways also. For example, the Torah at the end of Parsha Metzora speaks about the Zov. The Zov is a person who has an issue coming forth from his genital region, and it doesn't stop. And if you see it three times, then in that particular case, he then becomes a Zov. Some people say it's a form of gonorrhea or something like that, okay?
So a Zov
also is Mentami, a Kalim. Or if a woman continues to have blood, you know, issuing forth from her, not during the time of her regular cycle, but at other times, and again, it's the same story that we, you know, we suspect that it is due to a similar type of illness in a woman that corresponds to that in a man. So she's a Zova, okay? So at any rate, a Zova or a Zova if they sit on a bed, or if they sleep in a bed or something. So becomes tummy as a result of it, okay? So once you have a complete Kalim from this point on, it will always be Mekabel Tumah. Okay, Mekan Ulahaba. So they say, Mekan Ulahaba. But Lemafreya, lo. But you can't go back and say what was before, you know, it became retroactively tummy. In other words, until the time that it became put together, no, it's not. So, of course, the question is, you know, what is its relevance over here? So he says, Almoy says, from this we learn what? Gaven the Palguho or Aplotumo. That from the moment that they split it up, then the tumor has flown away literally. In other words, has disappeared from it. Okay? So, Hochinami, so he says, likewise here. In other words, in the case of the guys who separate from the woman, from the Mizuman, so, Kevan the Isman Elayu, from the moment that they answer in the Mizuman, all that they have to do is to say, Baruch Shalom Yishalom, or, you know, yeah, that's all they have to say, right? Then in that particular case, the minute they've said that, even if they have not said anything else yet in the benching, the obligation of the Zuman has now disappeared, it's now flown away from them. So that's the point that we made. In other words, that once you've answered the Mizuman, then you can no longer go running around to the other side of the table and answer the second Mizuman over there. Not unless, as I explained to you before, if you eat something else, you make a bracha and everything else and so on, so then you can be counted, but not under other circumstances.
And coming back to this is about the bed.
Yeah.
You say about being not being retroactive.
Yeah.
If the bed was tumei before they split it apart, then the whole bed is
tumei. Then it will remain tumei,
right? So we have to assume that the tumei took place in half the bed after it was split apart.
Right. In either case, right. If the tumor occurred in half a bed, then in that case it's ineffective, okay?
But if they put the bed together again with the tumor apart, it's transferable before they
dissolve.
Now, what is he saying about the tumei having flown away? Where is that come in?
The tumei has flown away from anything which is not a complete kela at its inception, okay?
I see.
The same thing. The Mishnah and the Aros goes into the whole business.
In other words, the part that was tumei, half the bed was tumei. I mean, because it wasn't complete, it flew away from that too.
Therefore, right, it was not susceptible at this point yet to being tumei.
Okay. So now, if the Tara part came back and was put together with the part that was tumei before,
once it becomes complete, then it's possible to consider it being tumei.
But tumei again,
right?
Okay.
In general, you say, for example, you take a piece of leather, okay?
right piece of leather is not susceptible to tumah in its form. Make it into a shoe, and becomes possible, right? Because once it's a complete shoe, then that might be the become susceptible. All right. Then the Mishnah said, and let's review again. Bring back the page for a moment. All right. The Mishnah, if you remember, was speaking about, first of all, said Shlosha Shofar Tiyachas, right? That three people eat together, and then Inu Hashem Makalek, right? They're not allowed to split up, and the same thing applies whether they are four or five. All right.
Bob, we said Nechlok and Arasar, right? If there are six, then they can be split into two groups, okay? Until you reach number 10. 10, ain't Nechlokin, right?
They can't split up.
Right, they can't split up until you have at least 20, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then it says, Shtei Chaburo Shohiyo Ochos Bebayis Echaya, Bebayis Echot. If you have two different groups eating in one literally house, but it could also mean room, because very often the word bias in the Mishnah means a room. Alright, it wouldn't make any real difference, because all that we're saying is that if you have two different groups, okay. So then the Mishnah says, there's Manshan, Iksasan, Roan, Eilu, Seilu, right? As long as some in one group can see some in the other group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then in that particular case, it says, Hareil, Mistrofin, Lizim. Then you can add them all together in order to form a bigger mezuzah, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or the north form mezuzah. I mean, let's say that you had two here, three there, or something like that. And the two here would prefer, you know, to be counted to the mezuzah with the three. They don't have to, I mean, because they don't have the obligation as long as they're eating separately and they're only two. But nevertheless, let's say that they also want to have a share. So as long as this group can see that group, even if it's only to see the last guy sitting over there, and it's only one guy over here. But as long as someone in one group can see someone in the other group, then in that case they can all be added to the mezuzah. Or if, let's say, you had five and five, and they decide, look, it's nice at the bench, you know, and say, right? So they can be counted together as one bigger group. Okay, as long as some can see each other. Okay, so this is what it says over here, right? The imlav, but if they don't see each other, in other words, the two distinct groups, and neither can, no one in one group could see the others, then mizamnim liatzmon, right? Eilam mizamnim liatzmon. This group makes a mizamnim for itself, and the other group, eilam mizamnim liatzmon, right? Okay, so that was the next part of that mission. All right, so now they talk about that. We'll see. This is very, very short. All right, it says, Tana. We have learned, he says, and this happens to be a quotation from the Sefer, he says, Im ye shamosh b'nehem, shamosh mitzafen. Let's say the two groups can't see each other, but you have one person, a servant, who is serving both groups, and in that particular case, you could say that they are joined together by virtue of the fact that they're being served by the same person. Okay. So, let's say you go to a restaurant, right? And you're eating over there with your own little group, and you didn't have enough of a mizumin over there. The next table also has. So, if they have the same waiter or waitress serving them, then in that particular case, you could add one, right? You could add the two from here and the two from the next table, make it into one mizumin or something like that. But if not, then in that case, each group.
That's a bench individually.
Right. And again, remember that. You know, once you're not part of a mezuzah to begin with, you don't have the obligation, unless, as I say, you feel that you want to undertake to do it under the circumstances of the indicated. Okay?
But certainly, if let's say you got a group of 10 people come in,
yeah,
and they sit, they can't seat people at the same table.
Right.
And if they all sit down together, they have an obligation to bench together.
Absolutely.
Under those, even though they're sitting at separate tables.
Correct.
And they may not even be served by the same people, but as long as they sit down.
If at least, you know, you can see each other. Right?
Oh, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. But if, for example, we would be served over here, and somebody would be served in the rabbi's study or something like that.
That would be.
The
yeah, right. Okay.
Alright, and then the last part of the Mishnah says, Ein bracha l'hayayin, says you do not make a bracha for the wine, ad she'itein seichem mayim, right, until you add water to it, divrei Rabbi Eliezer. This is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Chachamim mayim b'brachim, but the rabbis say that you do make the bracha bori pri hagofen, of course, is what we're talking about, even though no water has been added to the wine. Of course, again, we have to bear in mind that the wine that they're talking about is not the wine that we have, the bottled wine. Of course, I don't know how much water has been already added to it. but we're talking about in those days, wine can hurt, you know.
We like brandy.
Right. it can knock the hair off your chest or something. Well, maybe it has hit your chest. I don't know. But it was real stuff, you know.
100
truths. At least 100 truths. Turn the rub on. So, again, quotation from Tosefta.
You know.
Sages learned that Yayin, actually, no some mistake, Mayim, a Mivakhmoto Burpi Agovin. Wine, as long as you have not put water into it, you're not allowed to make the Bracha Burpi Agovin for it. Elo, Dore Pri Hawais. What Bracha do you make for it? You make the Bracha Burpi Hawais. You know, praise God who created the fruit of the tree, because it still is like raw grapes that you're drinking, okay? But note them in the middle of your diet. And not only that, but if it is still not wine, but it's only, you know, like, what shall I say? I can't say grape juice, because grape juice actually also is Bori Pri HaGofen.
Right.
But, you know, it's like it was simply some kind of a liquid which contains...
that's what they make brandy.
Grapes in it, okay? Yeah, okay. So, as long as it's that way, this statement says that you're even allowed to use it in order to wash your hands. Because as long as it's not really wine, then you can use it in place of water for washing your hands.
What kind of bracha would you say over it if you did drink it?
Bori Pri Hawais.
Bori Pri Hawais?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Huh.
Yeah.
Mission
also on the Seicha Yamayim, but the minute that you add water to it, then the Gorkum Allah Bori Pri HaGofen, right? You make it the Bracha Bori Pri HaGofen of it. The Yain note limimenu, you're dying, right? And you're not allowed to use it in the Tilas Yidoyim. You're not allowed to use it nor to wash your hands down. Divrei Rabbi Elias, according to Rabbi Elias. Kachal b'mayimrim. And the sage you say, Vein kach v'vein kach. It makes no difference whether the wine has water added to it or whether it's still the raw wine, right? The Vorkum Allah Bori Pri HaGofen, the bracha that you have to make with is Bori Pri HaGofen, the Yain note limimenu of your diet. But you're not allowed to use it for the Tilas Yadayim, you know, unlike the previous statement that said that raw wine you could use in the Tilas Yadayim, since it's not wine yet. So this one says no, it is wine, and wine you cannot go and degrade it by
using it
right to wash your hands. Okay. So he says, "Kamanah Torah Domar Shmuel." They want to know, in accordance with whose opinion is the following statement which was made by Shmuel? And what was the following statement? His statement is, Oysa Odom Kol Tzorocho B'Pas. A man can do whatever he wants to with a piece of bread. In reality, even he, according to Tosfos, would not agree to all of these things. But theoretically, we're saying that a person can do whatever he wants to with a piece of bread. Such as what? Well, we'll see in a second. Come on. Whose opinion would this be, you know, whose opinion would it follow? It says Rabbi Eliezer. It follow Rabbi Eliezer. In the sense that, I mean, just as Rabbi Eliezer said a moment ago, that it's not wine until you add something to it to make it into wine, right? So, this statement that you can do whatever you want with bread, it's until what? Until you've actually made this bread, really, you know, as the food that you're going to be eating in the meal itself. All right, we'll come back to it in a moment as to see what suggested uses for bread other than as a food. Omar Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanino. So Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanino said, Modim Chacham Rabbi Eliezer B'Koshel Bracha. They agree with Rabbi Eliezer as far as the cup of wine that you use in order to make a bracha, in other words, let's say for benching or for kiddush, right? That's what they mean by the kosher bracha. She'ein mevorkin alov ashtem sechemayim. Or also kosher bracha means like for benching, because they would bench also over a cup of wine if they had a group of people eating in the meal. All right, so for the kosher bracha, you're not allowed to make the bracha bori pri hagofen over it,
until you add water to it. My Tamo, what is the reason that they say that? So Amar Rav Hoshaya says, this is a very important idea over here. He says, Be'inon mitzvah min hamuvkar. When you want to perform a mitzvah, perform it in the finest way that you possibly can.
Nice.
All right, you want to make a bracha with a kosher yayin, you want to make kiddush, you want to make havdalah, you want to bench using a cup of wine, then make sure that it is wine which is in, you know, the finest state of perfection that you possibly can. Not something which is so raw that it's like ratgut or something like that, okay? So that's the idea. But of course, I don't have to tell you, you could apply this to loads of other things, you know, that when you do a mitzvah, you should do a mitzvah in number four, the best possible way, the finest way that you possibly can.
Very important.
Right. For Rambodon, Lamai Chozi, so the rabbis who say that, you know, you cannot, that wine, even if it's raw wine, right, you still make the bracha per Pirei Gavin. So the question is, and so what value does this particular wine have if it's going to be like ratgut to the stomach? So the answer that they give is, the reason why you say Bore Pirei Gavin is because it does have one practical use. And the practical use is, Kaze le Kuryate. It's good for Kuryate. What is Kuryate? Kuryate is a mixture of wine and some other things that when they would take it, you know, they use it as a physic or to to take care of asthma and nausea and who knows what else. This is Kuryate. Okay. We can take a look for a moment at the Rashi, how he explains over there. Kuryate, he says, it looks like Trezon. We had this once upon a time, many, many weeks ago, okay? And I explained at that time that if we follow Rashi over here, then one possible meaning is that it was like, you know, fowl that was used. In other words, they use it, let's say, to doctor up the pheasant in order to make it taste better or something like that. So in that particular case, it has a practical use. But there are others who say, no, that it was like allontis and so on. In other words, which means that they used it for medicinal purposes. So if it is good for medicinal purposes, so it does have a practical use. Okay, kasi l'kuyate. Tanurabba. Now we've said before, you know, that Shmuel says it can use bread for all different types of things. So the question is, what are they talking about? So, Tanurabbanan, a sage said, Dalad devorim nemru b'pas. There are four things that were said concerning bread. In other words, bread can be used, you know, in four different capacities. Ein manichim basachai l'pas. First of all, you're not allowed to put raw meat on a piece of bread. Don't use it for that purpose. In general, I don't know who wants to eat raw meat, but...
That's very funny.
There are some people,
yeah.
Like the Saturday night, I take a look. He has a piece of fish over there, and he's slicing it, a raw fish. I said, what's this for? What do you mean? Japanese.
What
do they call it? Sushi. And he wraps it in seaweed, and he serves it, and people think it's a makaya.
Steak tartare is a very delicate, a very great delicacy. It's raw ground meat, it could be kosher ground meat, obviously. Mixed with spices, and they eat it raw. It's very delicious.
Okay.
But you know, you can eat it, but you don't have to put it on a piece of bread.
Right. Another thing, don't use this in order to pass a full cup of wine from one guy to the next. Put on a piece of bread to service.
like a teller.
Right. Exactly. In other words, it's debasing the use of the
bread
in that particular case. And besides, you know, if you move it, it's possible that the wine will spill upon and spoil the taste of the bread itself, okay?
Right.
Another thing, the enzorkin is hapas. You're not allowed to throw a piece of bread around.
Oh.
That is not allowed to do. And by the way, this applies not only to what I sometimes observe at the Shabbos Shudas table with some of our Jungbard. They think that they have great fun by making balls of rachala and then throwing it at each other, which of course is an absolute violation,
it's a violation also of another basic rule, and that is what we call Baltashchis. You're familiar with the expression Baltashchis?
No.
Baltashchis means that you're not allowed to take something and spoil it. You should, you know, use it, but don't spoil the thing, right? Baltashchis. So that this one, right, you're taking food which should be eaten, and you know, they're using this as a plaything by throwing it around and spoiling it.
You can't have food pipes anymore.
Right.
Wow. Yeah.
The Ain Somkin is Akora Bapas, and the next thing that they say also, don't use it sort of like a placemat. Don't take a dish and place it on top of bread. The bread, in other words, is important, and therefore it deserves that you know, you treat it honorably. Not only that, I mean, don't forget that according to you know, Tilim, for example, they speak highly about bread as being what? You know, v'lechem yivat enosh yisod, right? That bread is a support for the heart of man. In other words, they speak very highly of bread as giving life and sustenance to human beings. So that
in
it's
English,
not the basic.
Bread is the staff of
life. Yeah, that's what we say, but it's the staff of life. It's really based upon the idea that I mentioned in Tilim, right? Okay. Well, I think it's almost 8 o'clock, so that...
Not quite.
Okay, right. Okay. All right, so let's do a couple more lines, and then we'll call it a night. Okay? Amemur Mazuta Ravashi, Korcha Rifta Bahade Adoni. These three people, Amemur Mazuta and Ravashi, they were eating a piece of bread, you know, they were eating bread with each other. In other words, they were having, you know, they were dining together. So they brought before them tamare verimone, you know, dates and pomegranates. Shokol marzutra, so marzutra took, posach lekami Rav Ashi, and he threw it in front of Rav Ashi. You know, he took this fruit and he threw it distanor. Distanor means that, you know, he threw it in front of him as, you know, a course, okay? So in other words, he wanted to serve him, but instead of, you know, passing it to him
gently,
like a gentleman, he came and he threw it to him to eat. Omalei, so he said unto him, Lo seva lo amar, lo detanya, aren't you in agreement with that which we have learned, which says, Ein zorkin es ha'ochlin, that you don't throw food around? So he answered him, Ahi befas tanya, that refers to a piece of bread, but other foods, right? So though he says, but didn't we learn, didn't we learn that just as you're not allowed to throw bread, you're also not allowed to throw food around? So Amaloi, so he said to him, didn't we learn, didn't we learn a contrary statement that says, even though we're not allowed to throw bread, we are permitted to throw food? Elo Leikashi says, but actually there's no contradiction about, you know, the fact throwing the food other than the bread. Bread, everybody's agreement, don't throw it. Okay. But food? Yes or no? Ho bemide dimonis, ho bemide loimonis. If food is going to be spoiled by virtue of being thrown around, let's say you have a ripe piece of fruit, okay, and you throw it, and in the course, you know, it becomes bruised and starts into the squirt, so that's spoiled. So that you're not allowed to do it. But something which is not going to be spoiled even if you throw it. So in that particular case, it would be permissible. Tana Rabbonim, now I'll go down already to the two dots over there. Tana Rabbonim, our sages have learned that Mamshichin Yaim Sinoros of Nei Chosin of Nei Kalim. They apparently had a custom whereby they would pipe wine through pipes to the chassan and to the kala. The zorkin lifteihem, and they would throw in their presence, throw before them literally, kolios ve'egozim. Kolios is parched grain, in other words, grain that has been roasted, like sort of like popcorn or something like that, okay, or maybe roasted peanuts or something.
Yeah.
But it's roasted, okay? Ve'egozim and nuts, all right? They would throw these things in front of them. Bimos hachama, during the summer months, literally during the months of sun, but it means during the summer months, In other words, when it was dry,
uh-huh.
but not during those months when rain fall. Why? Because obviously, if they threw it in front of them during the time that it was raining, the minute that you would take, you know, the let's say the parched grain, it gets soaked, it gets dirty, and so on. It's no good. But you're not allowed to throw cakes in front of them, because cakes could spoil. Neither in the summertime nor nor during the rainy season. Okay.
Right.
So, of course, we learn from here then that food is an item that we should value. We should not abuse it by throwing it around, by spoiling it deliberately or anything else. Okay.
Okay.
Next week we shall continue at 7:30, our regular time in Yotz Hashem, right?
So we're on.
We shall continue. We're now at the bottom of Nun, Omid Beis.
Omid Beis.
All right. Five lines from the bottom. Six lines from the bottom. Right.
And this is November 11th.
Right. And guess what? There's a good chance we're going to finish this chapter next week. Start. Okay, we are now, 1, 2, 3, we're on the sixth line from the bottom. Okay.
Page 100 there?
Right, yes, yes.
Six lines from the
bottom. Right, six okay. lines from the bottom.
Nun Ahmed Beis.
Right. All right. Nun Rav Yehuda. So now the question that they raise is as follows. Rav Yehuda said that Shochach v'chich nesokh nesokh v'balei brocha. What happens if a person took a piece of food and he started to eat it or chew it or whatever it is he put into his mouth literally, and he didn't make a bracha beforehand? So what should you do?
Spit it out.
Well, there are different opinions, we'll see in a moment. So anyway, he says, "Disalkon litzad echad." Okay, mevorach. He says what you do is to take the food that's in your mouth, move it to one side, and then you make a bracha. Okay.
Who said that?
This is Rav Yehuda.
Okay.
Okay. So now they bring in a couple of other quotations taken to Sefer, which indicate that there are other opinions. Okay.
Okay.
Tanya Chado, one to Sefer says as follows. It says Bola on, he has to swallow it.
Huh.
Okay. Tanya Ido, Polton. Another one says spit it out.
Yeah, he agrees with me.
Right. The Tanya Ido, and another one says Misalka. You know, you move it to the side. As Rav Yehuda has said, right?
Right.
So, inasmuch as they're all in disagreement with each other, so the question is, what's the right procedure?
Exactly.
So the Gemara comes and says, Lekasha. Nah, that's not a difficulty. Why not? He says, because it depends what kind of food it is that they have in their mouth now. Or the Tanya Bola on, where we learned that he swallows it, this is Bimashka. It's if he's drinking. Okay, if he has a drink, so let's say he took a couple of sips and he remembered, oh, I didn't say bracha.
Yeah.
Swallow what you have, and then make the bracha, and then take
continue.
More. Right, okay. The Hordetanya Polton, and the opinion that says that you spit it out, it's bimide delay mummies. This is with food which will not be spoiled. In other words, if you started it to chew, if it would already be spoiled as a result of the chewing, then that's not what you do. But if you know it's hard, it's substantial, it's not going to melt or something like that, take it out of your mouth. Doesn't mean necessarily, by the way, spit. Polate means that you have to
handle it and remove it.
Yeah, remove it before you swallow it.
Make a broth and then you eat it. Right. Examples. I mean, let's say you started to eat an apple or something like that. Okay,
yeah,
you're not spoiling the whole apple by virtue of the fact you took a bite of it, or a date, or you know, or something like that. So in that case, you take it out and you make the broth, and then you can continue eating. Or the tanya misalkon. And how about the case where it says put it to one side of the mouth? It's been medium mammoth. This is with something where the food is going to be spoiled once you start to chew upon it. So you don't take it out of your mouth, but instead push it to a side in your mouth, and then in that particular case, then you make the bracha. So the Gemara asks the following question. It says, "Midei delei mamis nam nisaklim tzad echod v'livarech." Look, why can't, even if something this is not going to be spoiled, why can't you just move it to one side of the mouth and make the bracha? As we said, let's say it's like a date, okay. You have a date, right. So we said before that it's not going to spoil if you take it out of your mouth, right? So then you take it out there. But why can't you, if you start, just push it to a side, whatever you have in your mouth, right? And then you make the bracha. So why can't you do that? So Tigamo Rabbi Yosef Kasko, Kamed Rabbi Yosef Barat. So this Rabbi Yitzchak, who came from Kasko, wherever that may be, he explained it in the presence of Rabbi Yosef Barat. Mishmei Rabbi Yochanan, he credited this to Rabbi Yochanan. Mishum Shenemar, the reason why you don't do it in this particular case is because you have a pasuk. And what does the pasuk say? The pasuk says, "Yimolei fit hilosecha, may by mouth be filled with your praise." In other words, when you make a bracha, that should be what you're occupied in at that particular time. What your mouth should be busy with, and not chewing at the same time. So because of that reason, if it is food, you know, which is not going to spoil, then in that particular case, take it out so that your mouth will be there in order to praise the Rebbeinu Shlomo. Boy, my name is Rav Chisda. Now they ask part of the question. Rav Chisda says, "Misho achal b'shosa u'belo be'rach." What if a person ate and he drank and he didn't make bracha afterwards? No, he was not talking about the bracha before. We're talking about the bracha. Right, Birkas Hamazon.
Birkas Hamazon.
Right. Mahu Shayakta Vivar. Question is, shall he return and make the bracha? Or shall he once more eat and make a bracha? Or something like that. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is, shall he do it over again? So Amaluhu. So he answered them in a way in order to indicate that it's not such a hard idea. He says, Misho Achal Shum. Let's say somebody ate garlic. Varecho Nodei. And the odor is flowing from his mouth because of the garlic, okay? So So should he go and eat another piece of garlic in order that the odor shall continue flowing from him? So the idea being, apparently what he's saying over here is, look, he should have benched. He should have made a bracha. I mean, naturally, if it's a meal, you know, then he should bench. If it was a piece of food, he should make a bracha, you know.
And
the pushes, right? Yeah, the pushes or whatever it may be. Alcohol, depending on what he is eating.
Whatever,
for, okay.
Right.
And the fact that he didn't do it sounds, you know, it's his tough luck. In other words, he chalk up on the demerit side, you know.
Yeah.
Having
a vera.
Right.
No gold star at
Omar Rabino, so Rabino said, Hilkoch, if that's the case, he says, Afilo Gomar Sudoso, Yasu Yevorech. He says, look, in my opinion, he says, even if he has already finished his meal, he should return and he should bench. The Tanya, and now he quotes a Gemara in Pesachim, which says, Toval the Olo, if a person went into the mikveh, and then he comes out from the mikveh, in other words, he comes out from the water, it doesn't mean necessarily that he steps out of the mikveh.
Hmm.
What it really means is all over here, you know, it becomes a wreck.
Right, yeah.
Because after all, in order to go into the mikveh, you have to immerse yourself completely. Okay.
Right.
So after you've immersed yourself, you come up. So Omer Bali also, then he says, at the time when he comes up, he says, Baruch Asher Kedishonim Nisoyzav Tzivanu Alat Bina. He makes a bracha that blessed art thou, Lord our God, who has sanctified us by his commandments, commanded us to sprinkle ourselves. Okay. Now I have to tell you right now, that the question is, we'll take a look at Tosfos in a minute. Okay. So now the Gemara says, the Lohi, it's not really the correct. Why? Hosam yikora gavalei chosik. Because in the case of the person who was toivel in the mikveh, he says, to begin with, he was not in a fit condition to make a bracha. Why? Because he was unclean before he went into it, okay? But Hocho, here in the case of a person who's eating and he simply forgot, you know, to bench afterwards, so Mikora Garakhozi, he was in a perfectly good condition in order to make a bracha. The Hoyo de Itche Itche, and inasmuch as he failed to do so, then that's it. As I said before, it's chalked up against him. Okay. In reality, I want to tell you first of all, before we take a look at the Tosfos, the halacha does not necessarily follow this last opinion. What they want to know, for example, in the Shulchan Aruch is as follows. If a person, for example, has eaten his meal, and then he gets up, you know, and he has not benched, okay, and he suddenly moves away, goes away. So the question is, at this particular point, what should he do when he remembers that he hasn't benched? Okay? So, one possibility is that he goes back again. In other words, contrary where it says, you know, the original question was Yachto, shall he return? And we could understand and return
and
to the place.
And eat something and bench?
Right.
But then he's not benching for the original meal then.
Well, but it could be a continuation. I mean, it could be considered a continuation. Understand? So he goes back to the original place where he was and he benches over
his
there.
His whole purpose and
right.
plot was in the same
Yeah.
tune.
I'll come back to that in another second too, because that introduces another technicality. Okay. What if, however, he's too far away already to come back?
Right.
Then in that case, they suggest that he benches wherever he is. Stop and bench at that particular point. Okay. Now, there's also a time limit. This is the thing that's not mentioned
over
here. There's a time limit. What is the time limit? Time limit is 72 minutes. Why 72 minutes? Because they consider that in 72 minutes, food will be digested. So once the food is digested, then that's it.
Yeah.
There's nothing to talk about.
Number
right.
72 came up before.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah, we had in a different context.
Waiting.
Right. For example, in the morning, right, what is the time differential between the time when the morning star rises, at which time technically you could begin, davening at that point, whereas sunrise is the appropriate time to do it. And
right.
we learned, you know, there were 72 minutes prior to sunrise.
Right, you can
right.
still say Shema.
Right. Mm-hmm. So,
even though it's dark, it can still daven.
Yeah, but then they would recommend that after the sun rises, that they say the Shema over again, right?
Or
if you could drag out, I mean, you know, it all depends. If it's an emergency that you must, you know, you have to have an early start, then in that case, technically, you're yotzei by davening any time 72 minutes prior to sunrise.
But there's nothing wrong, let's say you're driving along in the car, you have to get an early start.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with you saying the Shema while you're driving along.
No, you can certainly do it, absolutely. Matter of fact, if you take a look, you know, what we say over here in the morning. You start him with the brachas and so on and so forth, and then you come Ashrenu Shanach Mashima Vim, Ravekvim, Pamayim, Bahayim, Shema Yisrael, Adashem, and Kenesha Mechad. One explanation for the inclusion of that is the fact that we want to make sure that we're saying it early enough so that's within the time that, you know,
the,
right. So that, let's say, if you go to a shul where they daven later, at least you will have said that posik of the Shema. Many people add actually the entire first paragraph.
Right.
If you take a look, the Siddurim vary, right? The Siddurim vary. Some Siddurim include the first paragraph of the Shema, others do not. The ones that we use over here, they don't have it. But if you take a look at other Siddurim, after all, we have many, many Siddurim around, you'll see that many of them do include it, okay? All right, so that 72 minutes counts. So, as I say, that coming back with the benching then, if it is still within 72 minutes, then in that particular case, you could bench or, you know, make the bracha afterwards. If it's after that time, then that's it, spapalan. Okay? Yeah. But some people, by the way, let me add, when, you know, if it's before 72 minutes, they'll eat something in order to keep it going. So that's still within the time frame. You know, it's considered like a continuation of the meal that they had started before, which is similar to something that we studied a few weeks ago, where the question is, you know, after they serve the main course, and you bench, so is that it? Or can you say that you expect goodies yet to follow and so on and so forth? Yeah.
Didn't Judaism allow a little... the thought processes that will accept the situation. I'll give you an example. I'm saying Kaddish, but it's somebody else's yahrzeit.
Yeah.
And you can think, and you say that you're saying the Kaddish for him.
Mm-hmm.
Is this correct?
Yeah, it could.
But but this is in the thought processes.
Right. I mean, usually when I recite Kaddish, I also have it in mind. Am I saying it for myself?
You have it in mind.
Saying it for other people.
Exactly. So, you have it in mind.
Yeah.
So it's like like Phil explained about Kiddush, saying Kiddush Friday night, if there are, let's say, four males sitting around the table, not everybody has to say Kiddush. They say, usually one person says it, and the other people say, have me in mind, right, when you say Kiddush. Right. And
yeah.
There you say with that
expression. Well, now we're getting off on a little different tangent.
Yeah. No, but I have a question.
Sure.
Let's assume there's a kosher gourmet club. Okay?
Yeah.
And everybody supplies a course of the meal. You go from house to house.
Yeah.
You start with the first spice at one place, uh-huh, you start with a soup at another place, and you go.
Sounds good.
All right. I mean,
sounds
and everybody.
Like the Torah used to be celebrated like that over here in Springfield.
Yeah. that's what I had in mind, as a matter of fact. Okay.
Yeah.
And but you're not really sitting down together. You're not really. I mean, although you're having a meal, but it's in different places.
Not a complete meal.
So how do you bench?
Where do you bench?
You bench when you come home. So have something when you come home and bench. So
I see. But
or if you feel that you've had enough, you can bench any place.
Yeah, but you wouldn't say Motelechem in a horse every place you go either.
No.
So it's permissible. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that I start a meal. And I wash, have a piece of bread.
Right.
I sit down, have my first course, and suddenly I'm pulled away. I have to go to for a half hour somewhere else.
Yeah, right.
I come back.
Right.
And I continue my meal. I don't have to wash again.
No.
I can go continue on and
because you had in mind. I mean that's a continuation of course.
Yeah, it was an emergency. I had to go out or something.
Yeah, right. You bring out the same kind of reason that I just brought out. You keep it in mind, and it's locked
in. I didn't know that.
No, that's no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Look, the same thing. You make Kiddush over here in Shul Shabbos afternoon, right after the davening, okay? There is a difference of opinion as to whether when you come home you should again make Kiddush or not. But there is very definitely a strong view that says if you made Kiddush and you had at least mezonos, because, I mean, if you only made Kiddush, you only had, let's say, wine or schnapps and nothing else,
right,
or a piece of fruit, but you didn't have mezonos, then in that particular place there's no question that you must make Kiddush over again when you get home, okay? But if you had mezonos already, you know, you had cake, crackers, whatever it may be, you had a piece of fish and so on and so forth, do you then have to make Kiddush over again when you come home? You don't necessarily have to.
But you can.
If you can, if you want.
So you want
want to make everybody happy, so you make Kiddush over again.
If
you know that there's somebody who has not heard Kiddush before,
yeah,
and you want to make it, then that's absolutely the right thing to do.
Well, I mean, let's say your wife is not in shul with you,
yeah,
you go home.
Then there's no question. You go home, definitely
go home,
have to make Kiddush.
Yes.
Yeah.
Make Kiddush, you know,
right.
You know, like
then there's no question. But if you and your wife are together over here and there's nobody else who's coming home, you know, with you, then in that particular case you would be
yes.
Right. So even though you eat over here a little and then you continue the course at home, naturally at home you wash and eat, you know.
But there's a difference between the kiddush you make here and the kiddush you make at home. Because at home you say Yom HaShishi, here you don't say Yom HaShishi.
No, I'm talking about Shabbos morning.
Shabbos morning. Oh, I thought you were talking about Shabbos.
No, I'm not talking about Friday night. No, Friday night's a different problem.
Different problem?
Yeah.
The same rules don't apply.
No, because Friday night, the Kiddush that they make in Shul over here, the original intention of that was because people would come and, let's say, wayfarers, and they'd stay over in Shul, they'd spend the night over there, so... for their sake, Kiddush was made, so and then they would sit down and they would eat a meal over there, okay, whatever it was that they had to eat. We don't do that, because we don't have, unless, I mean, you have, you know, let's say one of these special dinners, but even so, even though we make Kiddush over here from the pulpit, nevertheless, it's more correct to make Kiddush over the table than, when you have a dinner or something.
Would there also be the attitude of saying Kiddush for people who don't go home and say Kiddush?
Yes, correct. I mean, it's developed into that too.
Because
a lot of people are not saying Kiddush
anymore. So
they've gotten out of it. So at least, this is to remind them that there is such a thing as Kiddush.
Sanctify the Shabbat.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Okay.
All right, so as I said, I wanted to cover the placements over here, the one on the top over there. All right, they were talking, if you remember, they gave the example, first of all, of the person who goes into the mikveh, okay?
and it says that after he goes into the mikveh, after he gets out of the mikveh, then he makes the, or he stands up, you know, from immersing himself, he makes the bracha at that time, and the bracha is over here. And it says beforehand that, you know, he was not fit, now he's fit to make a bracha.
In other words, it implies that you cannot make a bracha before you go into the mikveh.
Correct. Correct. That's the implication of this. And then, yeah, right. And, okay. But now Tosfos asks the following question. It says, Miyakora Gavar Lechazi. It says, you know, to begin with, we say he was not in a fit state, right? Timo. Timo always means in Tosfos, hey, I'm surprised that they make such a statement.
That's a good word to know.
To be wondered at. Vahalo Tomeinu Oso Lavorech. After all, a person who is unclean is not prohibited from making the bracha. We're all in a state of tumah right now, right, as far as that's concerned, and yet we make brachas and so on, right? Okay. So, over kuntras, right? So, therefore, in Rashi, kuntras means over here, Rashi's commentary.
Okay.
Kuntras is probably, you know, sort of a corruption of the word commentarius. You know, commentary.
Sounds like, like a Greek word or something.
No, it's Latin. Latin. Yeah, right. So it says in the Kuntras, in other words, in Rashi, Peirush, he explained, the Bali Kri in Asum Divrei Torah. Well, this we had a long time ago, if you remember. There was a discussion as to whether if a person had a seminal emission, is he permitted to study Torah? And the Ezra made a takona that such a person should not.
Oh, should not.
And, right, should not. Then subsequently they reversed the decree because they said it was too hot, too many of us. I mean, he had his reasons, they said. He didn't want men to be hanging around their wives all day long instead of devoting their time to studying Torah and things like that. So that's the reason why he passed that gezeira, you see. He made that edict.
That was the logic.
Right. But we don't do it because...
we don't hang around our wives all day long.
That's number one. And number two, listen, it's too difficult a law to follow. I mean, if we observed it, you wouldn't be able to daven with the tzibur and everything else.
That's
and
right.
So we don't observe it. Okay, so therefore, that decree was abolished.
We'd have to have a mikveh in every home.
Right. So, but nevertheless, Rashi says this was the reason why, okay, that the Baal Keri, you know, the person with the seminal emission, he is prohibited from words of Torah, in other words, studying Torah or even let's say some of the prayers and so on. Okay, v'yesh lomar. So now Tosfos comes with the solution. It says it's possible to say the Ma'ire b'tvilas gerim. Maybe we're talking over here about the immersion in the mikveh that a ger has to undergo, because this is already a different story.
Sure.
Again, I reiterate something. I mean, the question has come up a few weeks ago, and I said that in reality, when men go to the mikveh today, it's not because they must go to the mikveh, but they go because, you know, they want to sort of cleanse themselves so that it should be like spiritual preparation, okay? The only place, as a matter of fact, where the Shulchan Aruch says that you have to do is actually Erev Yom Kippur.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is
it's considered a mitzvah to go Erev Yom Kippur, right? But again, I mean, for the same reason. I mean, that it's...